to do something that we don't usually do. I want to give you the history of this very important holiday. And here it is. On this day in 1700, English pranksters began popularizing the Anglo tradition of April Fool's Day by playing practical jokes on each other. By the way, our heads have been swimming all week long of what we could have done, and Caleb, we missed the obvious thing. All we should have done is just changed the lyrics from the TV back there, but left these up here like the rest. We just think two different things. Isn't that hilarious? We thought about messing with the books. We had lots of ideas, but I want to live, so I decided not to do any of them. Although the day is also called April Fool's Day, it has also been celebrated for several centuries in different cultures. Its exact origins remain a complete mystery. Some historians speculate that April Fool's Day dates back to 1582 when France switched from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar as called for by the Council of Trent, and therefore people were actually celebrating the new year on April 1st instead of January 1st. It also comes from the fact that these included practical jokes placed on people's back that were like paper fish or called April fish to symbolize somebody that was caught off guard and was very gullible. Historians have also linked April Fool's Day to the ancient festivals of Hilaria, isn't that an interesting name for somebody who likes to play jokes, which was celebrated in Rome at the end of March and involved people dressing up in disguises. There's also speculation that April Fool's Day was tied to the vernal equinox on the first day of spring in the new hemisphere when nature fooled people by a change in weather. We don't know where they came up with the idea, but I got to tell you, you just don't get Easter and April Fool's Day to line up all on the same day, but once in a lifetime maybe. So really, this sermon made perfect sense because this is no joke. Now, things that usually go with the holiday of April Fools, things like deception, trickery, gullible, and foolishness. Now, I just want to let you know, I am not opposed to a good practical joke. As a matter of fact, I like to brag that I have a place in history all to myself. There was a minister in Charlottesville who also served as a youth minister for many years, then became a senior minister, and he bragged and bragged and bragged. In all the years of his ministry, nobody had pulled a practical joke on him. Nobody had managed to prank him. You just don't give me a challenge like that. And before it was over with, he ended up soaking wet, 25 gallons of water, and four disappearing teenagers. So they were trying to figure out how it happened. He knew who was involved, but what you know, better than what you can prove. So I love a good practical joke. As a matter of fact, I knew our kids are with us. So kids, this is your notes for the day. I'm going to give you the recipe on how to pull off the perfect practical joke. Here it is. Number one, you have to identify a target. Okay? Not a random one, but you have to identify who it is you're going after in this. You have to earn their trust. I mean, if they don't trust you, you can't get close enough to pull off your practical joke. So you have to earn their trust. You have to not make it too obvious. I mean, if they see it coming, then you don't really get them that well. So you kind of have to do the sleight of hand and not let them see it coming. Timing is everything. Man, you want to wait till they're at their moment, and there they are, and you know that they're ready, the pump is primed, and you can execute exactly what you got there. But then comes that very important part, and the part where most people lose their ability to pull off a good prank, and I think this is the reason that maybe I've managed to pull off quite a few in my lifetime, is the fact that you have to have a little self-control. You have to be able to do it with a straight face, not laughing, not giving hints that it's coming. You might even have to be willing to be close to yourself and get caught in the aftermath a little bit just so that your joke goes off well. See, the idea behind it is that you have to convince them all the way up until the point that it actually happens that nothing's going to happen. That's how you do that. But you see, unfortunately, we are dealing today with something that is not a joke. We have spent the weeks leading up to Easter, this day, going through a series called The Case for Christ. And in it, it documented the story of Lee Strobel, who went from an atheist, somebody who did not believe in Christ at all, to a born-again believing Christian, and how he put the pieces together and how he put the evidence together. And ladies and gentlemen, I just wanted this morning kind of put all the pieces back together so you understand. This isn't a joke. This wasn't something that somebody thought up, somebody put a bunch of things together, somebody that just tried to earn your trust so they can give you some kind of a deception. I want to just put the actual pieces right there in front of you today so you can understand exactly why it is we come here and we celebrate not on April Fool's Day, on the day that we call Easter Sunday. And the first thing you need to know is, guess what? No joke, it actually was empty. Matthew chapter 28, verses 1 through 6 says, "After the Sabbath at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning. His clothes were like snow. The guards were so afraid of him, they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the women, 'Do not be afraid, for I know who you are looking for, Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where his body lay.'" I love the way God did this. He did it in such grand fashion. He started out with a violent earthquake, the shaking of the ground, something humanity could not do on their own. He created a bright light, a light so bright that it blinded the people that were around there. They didn't understand what was going on. Again, something humanity could not do. Angels came and moved the stone. It wasn't the Roman guards that were on the way to see what was going on inside that tent. It wasn't the apostles. It wasn't the women. He sent angels, something that, again, mankind cannot produce, to go and roll over that stone. And then there it was. The guards fainted. Good choice, guards. I believe I would have done the exact same thing. They passed out with all that they were seeing. And when the stone was rolled away, it was the big reveal. It was empty. McGinney would have been so proud. The greatest escape ever done, because the tomb was empty. But you need to understand why it was empty, because, no joke, he is risen. While they, we're now a few hours past this, where the they is the apostles, we're still talking about this, Jesus himself stood among them and said to them, "Peace be with you." They were startled and frightened, thinking they had seen a ghost. He said to them, "Why are you troubled? And why do doubts rise in your mind? Look at my hands and my feet. It is myself. Touch me and see. A ghost does not have flesh and bones as I do have, as you see I have." When he said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. And while they still did not believe it, because of the joy and amazement, he asked them, he must have been a good person, do you have anything to eat? They gave him a piece of boiled fish, and he took and he ate in their presence. So they had gathered together, and here were the apostles, and it was absolutely no joke. Jesus came walking through the walls. I just want to tell you, had I been in attendance, I'd probably taken the guard in place. I'd just passed out right there. You don't have to work, there's people walking through walls. I don't think I would appreciate that kind of joke. But I do want you to see, they thought they were looking at a ghost. They thought they were looking at a spirit, because they were very superstitious people. And so he wanted to make sure they understood, this is not a joke. This is not a ghost story. I have risen. So I want you to look at what he did. He spoke. He had a physical voice that came out of his mouth. He was physical. What did he say? He said, "Touch me." He had flesh and he had bones. The scars from his life were still right there in front of him. He was willing to let them reach out and touch it all. And then he even ate. You understand what he was telling them, right? It isn't enough to just assume it was empty. That wasn't the great trick. What was really done is he was 100% alive. He had risen from the grave. And he was offering them the physical evidence that they understood they were not being deceived. It was not a practical joke. Somebody didn't put together some elaborate hoax or scheme. He had risen. And now we have to come to some very serious questions. I mean, this story happened 2,000 years ago. I mean, I just want to let you know, Jesus had never come and stood in front of me and offered me anything physical to touch. So how today, in 2018, on April 1st, can I know that
bring you into the idea, understand, no joke, even back then, people tried to hide the truth. This is what it says in Acts chapter 27, verses 63 through 65. It's a piece of the Easter story that we gloss over, but I just want to make sure you understand how important it was that that tomb was empty. The next day, so this is the day after the crucifixion, on the day of preparation, the chief priests and the Pharisees went to Pilate. Remember Pilate, Roman governor, in charge of the Roman army in that area? And they said, we remember that while he was still alive, that the deceiver said, after 3 days, I will rise again. Interesting, the Pharisees caught it, but the disciples kind of didn't. So give the order for the tomb to be made secure until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples may come and steal the body and tell the people that he had raised from the dead. The last deception will be worse than the first. Take a guard, Pilate answered. Go make the tomb as secure as you know. So they went and made the tomb secure by putting a seal on the stone and posting the guard. Why is this important to us? You understand, one of the great theories is that one of the reasons Jesus was in the tomb on the morning of is because he was never there to start with. They put him in the wrong place. You know, somebody mixed up the tags and they routed it the wrong way. He wasn't where he was supposed to be. Do you understand the importance of the scripture? By authority of the Roman guard, people went to secure that tomb. That means these men walked in there and made sure, guess what? There is a body. They also probably took a really long look to make sure it was the right body. Remember, the whole idea was that they were afraid of the great deception. They were afraid of the fact that somebody was going to steal it. They were going to try to say he had risen from the dead. They were worried about the practical joke, the prank. And so they went in there and they made sure the body is here. Yep, it's the right person. And then they rolled a stone over in front of it and they sealed it up. And understand, they said they sealed it. They just rolled the stone. They would have went around it with like some mud and made sure this thing was sealed. It was airtight. Remember, there's a dead body in there. They would have sealed it up, and then they would have taken something and put it across the stone and put the seal of the Roman emperor on the outside of that, saying, this tomb is sealed by authority. No one allowed. It's like a crime scene piece of paper. Nobody allowed in here. They were 100% sure that body was in the tomb. And you know what? To make sure it was going nowhere, they placed 24/7 round-the-clock guard on that tomb until after the day that he was supposed to rise and pass. You kidding, right? The fact that tomb ended up empty was no accident, and it was no joke. But when it did end up empty, immediately people started trying to hide the truth. Matthew chapter 28, verses 11 through 15. While the women were on their way, some of the guards went to the city and reported to the chief priest everything that had happened. And you would think that somebody would have actually reported everything. I'm sure the guards told the story. I believe I was the chief priest and the Pharisees. I would have tried to change my mind and say, well, maybe he really was who he said he was. When the chief priest had met with the elders, they devised a plan. Here comes the practical joke. Here comes the deception. They gave the soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, you are to say his disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep. Now you understand that would have been punishment by death for a Roman guard to fall asleep on the job. So they're putting their life on the line here, but they got paid really well to do it. Then they assured the soldiers, if this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble. I don't think I would trust him. So the soldiers did what most people did. They took the money, and they did as they were instructed. And this story has been widely circulated among the Jews to this very day. So even from the very beginning, people were trying to deny, even with the physical evidence there, they were trying to deny the truth. This is no joke. That tomb was empty. The Savior had risen. And the sad thing is, no joke. Some were fooled. Luke chapter 24, verses 1 through 25. Now, on the same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. They had talked and discussed these things with each other. Jesus himself came up and walked along them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, had answered them, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," he replied. "He was a prophet." I'm sure at that moment Jesus was going to take a faster pop. "No, he's not a prophet. That isn't who I was. And he was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and the rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is on the third day since this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early in the morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen visions of angels who said he was alive. Then some of the companions went to the tomb and found it was just as the woman had said, but they did not see Jesus. He said to them, here's the words, how foolish you are, and how slow to believe all the prophets have spoken. You understand, these men just couldn't accept it. They were living, they were mulling over the story that they had heard, and they were fooled by the fact that, you know what, there had to be a better logical explanation. I mean, let's face it, I have to watch my professor take my mom here. I have played those in grade work. And I do understand. People don't walk out of grade. I've never seen one. But here we go. Here he is. And now they're walking down the road. And they just don't get it. They've been fooled. They think it's over. And as sad as that sounds, understand that they will continue to be fooled. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, children born not of natural descent or of human decision or husband's will, born by God. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. We have seen his glory and the glory of the only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. After what the soldiers saw, you think, guess what? They would believe. But their hearts were full. After what the Pharisees experienced, you would think they would have figured it out and they would have been ready to be a follower of Christ. But you know what? Their hearts were full. In the room that evening, with all the physical evidence there, the apostles still had their doubts believing. On the road to Emmaus, the disciples were so caught up in the moment that they just could not believe. And this passage says, you know what? We do not recognize who he is. He's unknown to us. And in the spirit of evidence being fooled, so many people today were still living our life just like, guess what? It never happened. Or if it did happen, it was just one big practical joke. Ha ha, you got to go over. Centuries worth of people. But you understand, this is no joke. That tomb absolutely, positively was 100% empty. And so this is what I want to ask you this morning. Are you among the many? Are you among the many that have been fooled, or are you one of the ones that decided to be? Matthew chapter 24, verses 4 through 11 says, this is from the words of Jesus, "Watch out that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, claiming that I am the Messiah, and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but you will see that you are not to be alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still not to come. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All of these things are the beginning of the birth pains. Then you will be handed over and be persecuted and put to death. You will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time," this is what it says, "not some, not few, not a couple, not one. It says that many, at that time, many will turn away from the faith and betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. See, here's the thing. The essence of a good practical joke is when it's all over, people can't believe you got away with it. People are still trying to figure out how you did it. They're still walking through 112 Market Street. You know, the church isn't there anymore. They still walk through there and like, how did they get four teenagers off the third floor? The third floor of a building, and there's all the way down except for the steps. I'll never tell you how we got them off. But I can tell you what, that room was empty when they got up there. But you understand, that wasn't church. That was nothing miraculous. That was just a good old-fashioned science. This is absolutely a miracle. And what I want to ask you today, have you been fooled? Have you been fooled into believing that really, really, really never happened? Because I'm here today to tell you that it's time for us to know Jeff. It's Easter. And he is absolutely, positively, without a shadow of a doubt, risen from the grave. And now it is our decision as to what we do next. We can live our life like it never happened. We can live our life like it doesn't matter. We can live our life like it's one big joke, and you know what? We think we've got the last one in this life. We can be fooled. Or we can live our life like it absolutely positively matters. I love the quote from the movie. Jesus did not rise from the dead. Christianity is meaningless. But if it's true, it's everything. And to live that way means follow him no matter the cost. It will rearrange your life. So I ask you, have you been fooled? Or are you willing to believe the truth? And that is the destiny within. We're going to do the Lord's Supper communion. It's something that we do every single week here at this church. But this morning, it's kind of got a double meaning. It is what it always is. It's that moment and time when I'm going to ask you to take all the things. I realize some of us have lots of plans today. Push the pause button on your plans. As the bread and the wine, the bread and the juice are passed, I just want you to take it in unison at the end. So I just want you to just sit there and just look at it. Stare at it. The juice represents